Hello everyone, and welcome to Season 2 of Don't Ignore the Elephant, the podcast where we talk about the stuff that no one else will. Literally, the elephants in the room. Now, since the last series, a lot has happened. If you follow me, you'll know that my mum was diagnosed with metastatic bone cancer just 6 months ago. Before she started chemotherapy, I interviewed her for the podcast. I wanted to talk about the lessons we've learned as a mother and daughter who've both had cancer. Sadly, Mum developed pneumonia during her third cycle of chemo and died just before Christmas. And I had to think long and hard about sharing her interview, but I know Mum would have wanted me to. So thank you for indulging me with this legacy lesson. I'd like to think that everyone can learn something from the one-armed bandit. I'd like to think that we all have people in our lives who inspire us on a daily basis. Some of them do it loudly, shouting from the rooftops and encouraging us to join them. Others do it quietly, just by living their life the only way they know how. Today's guest is a little different. I've known her for a long time. Some of you may know her as Isabel. Some of you may know her as the one-armed bandit. To me, she's simply Mum. She's had to watch from afar as I went through breast cancer twice. And now it's my turn as she goes through treatment for a bone cancer that spread. After having her right arm amputated 8 weeks ago, she's about to start chemotherapy, and it's my turn to feel helpless on the sidelines. I think there would be so much we can share to help anyone listening who's in a similar situation. And I can't tell you, Mum, how much it means that you agreed to be a guest.
Okay.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. That's very nice.
So I thought we'd just start at the beginning. Can you tell me what it was like when I told you that I had breast cancer?
Yes, it was very, it was strange because we were living in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And when you phoned to tell, it was really, it was like something that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't real.
Yeah.
And of course, you having, well, being a breast surgeon, you knew everything and you were protecting us, the rest of the family, from the real realities. So yeah. I suppose we thought, oh, well, you know, she knows it all. It'll be okay, which is very odd, I know.
And I got to give you a warning shot, didn't I?
You did.
Because I knew when they did the biopsy that I had cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was horrible ringing you saying, when I say, go and get Dad.
Yes.
Go and sit down.
Yes, that's right.
That must have made you terrified.
Yes, yes, yes. I was out in the garden planting some, I think it was summer bedding plants, and I'd got the phone and thought, oh, all right, okay. So in the go, and of course, trying to find Dad and come and sit down, it's Liz.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, I know. And it was just knowing that, yes, what you were going to say.
Yeah, it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd just moved to Scotland about a month before I was diagnosed.
Yeah.
How hard was it being so far away from me when I was having chemo?
Yeah. It was really hard because we don't know what you were really going through. We knew you were going through some awful times and there wasn't anything we could do. And we thought about we could go down and but I thought, well, we'll probably just be in the way. Because Dermot's looking after her and, you know, what are we going to do? So we should have come down, but I think we just felt you didn't want us.
And that makes you feel awful. I think for me, it was, you're so far away. I don't want the thought of you driving for 8 hours to come and see me when I'm just going to be sleeping. I thought it would be a waste of your time, but now I almost wish that I said, no, do come down.
Yes.
I did need you.
Uh-huh.
I needed my mum, but I thought, you're miles away.
I know.
But you said, I wasn't very good at telling you how I was feeling, was I?
No. Oh, no. No, you, it was all not clinical, but it wasn't, you weren't crying. You know, you weren't in tears or anything. You were very matter of fact about it all. So I suppose for us it was, you know, we just thought, okay, she knows what's going on, it's not nice, but yes, it was weird.
And I think for me, the minute I saw
the ultrasound and I saw the cancer, I was in denial.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
I still am now in a way. I knew too much and mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine going through it. Mm-hmm. And there was wanting to protect you. I remembered I'd ring you up and I wanted to tell you just how awful I felt. But I thought, I'm home alone and Dad can give you a hug. But if we cry on the phone, there's no one to look after me. So I just won't tell anybody. And it was...
Yes.
There's no rules on how to do with cancer.
I don't think there is. No, I think everyone is different. We're all different, how we approach things.
Yeah.
And how things affect us.
I think one of the hardest things for me was to ring you up and tell you over the phone, not being able to do it face to face.
Yes.
And it seems like I have a knack of getting you whenever you're gardening and putting plants in. Because the next time I gave you bad news was when I finished chemo. And I thought it was all clear, but they said, no, it's grown and it's in your lymph nodes. And that was an awful phone call.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Was that around about, it was Christmas
Yeah,
time.
It was the 23rd of December.
Oh my goodness, you know.
The guilt of I'd ruined everybody's Christmas. Oh. I can't tell you, but I have to tell you. Yeah. And again, you're so far away. It was...
But Christmas, you know, I think we were coming down. We came down, I'm sure. But it was just, you know, you think, oh, no. So it didn't bother us, Christmas, ruining Christmas. Never bothered us at all. It was just, oh, no, this poor girl, my daughter.
And then 2 years later, it came back.
It did. Yes, it did.
Was that harder to deal with?
Yeah, I think it was a bit scary, but it sounded as though it was going to be treatable.
Yeah.
So I think that made a difference in a way.
I think, although it was treatable, there was a much greater risk of it coming back in the future.
Yeah.
And I wanted to protect you and Dermot from that knowledge. You didn't need to know what I knew, but it, again, so hard to protect you, but also protect myself from what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yes, that's right. That's just how you coped with it, how you dealt with it, isn't it?
It must have driven you mad at times.
Oh, absolutely. Indeed.
And was it, I guess, for any woman out there who's got a child going through a similar situation, someone you know, your child is having cancer, is there any words of advice you could give them?
Oh.
I know, I hate those questions too.
It's just such a difficult one for me to answer because... I think everyone's different and everyone deals differently with bad news like that.
Yeah.
But it's just about being there and soaking up all that's coming at you and just try to be strong, I think, as you can. But it is, it's upsetting. It's very upsetting.
Did you ever wish you were in my place?
Oh, yes. That's the first thing you think of.
Really?
It should be me. Should be me going through all this, you know.
Yeah,
indeed. Going to bed at night and kind of silently screaming,
aww,
you know, this should be me.
I couldn't imagine, and then now I can, because we've kind of come full circle, haven't we?
We have indeed.
Now it's your turn
to be
the patient with cancer.
Exactly.
Can you tell us all how you found out what happened?
Oh, I had, I'd been gardening, as we do.
It's always the gardening, isn't it?
It's always the gardening.
It's dangerous.
And afterwards, I had, my arms had a swelling.
Yeah.
And it was quite sore to reach out, pick up a cup of tea, but I thought I'd just sprained a muscle or something, you know, when I was in the garden. So I just ignored it, just be fine. And then... you take the ibuprofen, don't you, and the paracetamol. And then this other lump appeared and it was kind of a rounded thing. I thought, oh, where's that come from? And anyway, we were here and I showed it to you and everyone seemed to think it was a muscle rupture or a ligament rupture, because it was kind of sore. So... I went off to see the GP and he had a look and he kind of wheeled his chair back and he had a look. And so he referred me to the clinic, orthopaedic clinic. But in the meantime, you know, Dad and I had gone into town and we were going into a cafe and I turned the handle of the door and I felt and heard this almighty crack.
Ow.
Oh, and I couldn't, I just couldn't move it. I couldn't bend or anything. It was so excruciatingly painful. And we went to A&E.
We did.
You took me to A&E and we had the x-ray and they didn't seem to think there was anything.
No, they thought you probably had pulled a muscle.
Yeah, they didn't think it was a break. And then, of course, you got a phone call. I think we all got, did we all get the phone call?
Yeah.
Saying, actually, did they tell me that?
No, we were going to be seen in the fracture clinic a week later, in the shoulder clinic a week later. That was it.
Indeed, we were referred.
So you'd had a week of swearing at home.
Yes.
In a sling. Yes. I learned words I didn't know existed.
Yeah, I know, because it was so painful.
And it's your right arm. It's the arm that you use. So.
Indeed. That's right, because we went then to the appointment was brought forward and we went to the orthopaedic clinic.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, so you've got this spiral fracture. I thought, oh, that's interesting. And got a bit nearer to the screen. Thought, oh, yeah. And he says, and we associate that with cancer. And I thought, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And it was really like, really? So they set me up with the MRI, PET scan, bloods. It's always bloods, always bloods. They always want your blood. And that was on that same day.
Yep.
And they said they would refer me to the orthopaedic hospital at Stanmore.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And that was like, oh, but of course, when he told me we associate this bone cancer, I thought, oh, Liz is already digging my grave because, yes, she'll know too much. Yeah.
It was, and then we got the phone call the next day, didn't we? Mm. So the orthopaedic consultant rang us at home to give us the results. Yes. And I'd gone round, so I was with you. And that was really hard.
Yes, it was. It was really hard, yeah.
When they said it was a bone cancer.
Mm, they did. And did they say there was something in the lungs?
Yeah, they told us it was in the lungs.
Uh-huh.
And that we'd have to wait to be seen at Stanmore.
Uh-huh, that's right. And, yeah.
I went to a very dark place at that time.
Mm. Yes.
I know a little, I don't know enough.
Yes.
I told you not to Google, but it's the first thing I did. Desperate for information, there was nothing out there.
Yeah, I didn't want to know anything.
And I think listeners may expect that you've got me as your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through chemo. I've had cancer. I'm a cancer surgeon. Yes. I'm the perfect person to look after you.
Yeah.
But I made some mistakes, didn't
you
I?
You did. Yes, you certainly had. You certainly had me in my grave earlier than I'd hoped.
I didn't realise you were picking that up from what I was saying because I was trying to be so calm and kind of prepare my brother that you might not be here at Christmas, but. Because I just thought, oh, my goodness, we didn't know how bad it was. And I had no idea. You were thinking, bloody hell.
I know somebody who'd written a book about dying and this and that. Oh, my God.
She's mucked it up.
Oh, no.
I rang the local hospice because you're in much pain. I thought the palliative care team can come and help with your pain control because paracetamol isn't touching it.
Uh-huh.
I now know you thought, I really will be dead by Christmas.
That's right. That's so true.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard dealing with someone else.
Yeah.
You know what you want,
yeah.
But I didn't actually ask you what you wanted. I just talked at you
It was a really difficult time waiting for that appointment. Actually, we had a biopsy done first.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. I went into the room and this lovely young lassie said, have you ever had a biopsy before? And I said, no. And she says, oh, how exciting.
What?
You must be so excited to have your first biopsy.
That's awful.
Actually, I'm not. It was so funny.
Someone's going to stick a bloody great needle in my arm.
I know. I know. So, yeah, but they were lovely. They were all very, very nice and took all this. I think they took five chunks of my tumour as it was then. Yeah.
And I think those first weeks were pretty hard waiting to find out. And for me, I hated being out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Dermot said he felt impotent when I was having chemo. And I know how he felt because I'm a doctor. I can't make you better.
No.
I'm watching you in pain with a broken arm, swearing like a trooper. I can't fix it.
Mm.
and it's rare. Yeah. There wasn't anything to Google because there were so few. And honestly, I thought it would be my cancer coming back. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd bury either of my parents because my cancer was going to kill me. Mm. And it was suddenly that, oh, yeah. No one prepares you for your parents dying, and I don't want to think about it. And it was so stirring up what I've been through, what I might be through, was, and how do I keep that from you? Because you didn't know all of that inside my head. But then we saw the surgeon, didn't we?
We did indeed. Yes, he was amazing, wasn't he? He was just the surgeon. It was an hour, was it about an hour consultation, just looking at me. And of course, he was telling me things which I just really went in one ear and out the other, because I knew you and my dad were there to pick all the things up. But he gave us hope, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that was the best thing. And he went through the options of the arm, from doing nothing to, I think it was to radiotherapy.
Yeah.
And then having surgery on the arm to remove all the tumour, but no guarantee that the hands, there would be nerve damage, so you wouldn't have much use in your hands. Yeah. So, and of course, then he went, the last one was amputation. And I had just thought, well, I think the second that one about where you can keep your arm, that sounds okay. And when we came home, that was kind of, we talked about that, didn't we?
We did. It was the risk of it coming back locally and how much do you put up with. And I felt, I guess, from the minute you broke your arm, I had a feeling that you'd need an amputation.
Oh, God.
But I felt, I didn't want you to know that. And I felt sick at the thought of my own mum having to decide to have her dominant arm removed. Yeah. But I knew that's where we would end up. And it was awful to see you come to that decision, even though I knew it was the right thing.
Yeah. I just woke up and, you know, when in the morning and I thought, it has to go. Yeah. Let's just have the amputation because that's going to protect... hopefully as much as it could the rest of my body. And so
quite a journey so far.
I know.
Did you even know that bone cancer was a thing, or that old people got bone cancer?
No. You hear about children sadly who have it and who die, but it's not in the news, it's not in the media or things like that. It doesn't really, no awareness. No. Is there?
Compared to breast cancer, it's everywhere. Oh, yes. There's always someone famous. It's always in the media. October, it's pink bras as far as the eye can see. Yeah. But what is it like knowing that you have such a rare cancer? I mean, there's less than 200 cases a year of osteosarcoma. Mm. How does it feel knowing that what you have is so rare?
Well, I think I feel very special. You know, come on. If we're going to have a cancer, let's make it a really good one. But it hasn't really affected me or bothered me. And really, it's just, I think the fact, obviously, he said, you know, it's the fast growing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And of course, it had gone into my lungs. And at that time, it was just a couple of spots. Mm-hmm. That she said, and that was okay. So, I went off. We had more MRIs and more bloods.
They just want to keep sticking you through scanners, don't they?
Yeah, I know.
But now you were a nurse, weren't you, when you first met Dad?
Yep.
And Dad was a GP and a surgeon, and I'm a surgeon, and my husband's a surgeon. Mm. Kind of the NHS runs in our veins. Uh-huh. It doesn't always get the respect it deserves.
No, I know it doesn't.
How do you feel about the NHS now you've been a patient as well as a member of staff?
Well, it was excellent from start to going on. Of course, it's start to finish, but it's not quite finished yet. Everybody has been absolutely amazing. I mean, the people are friendly. Some of them have got a nice sense of humour. And been brilliant, absolutely. You can't fault them in any way.
And you've had three hospitals, so you're about to start chemotherapy in Addenbrookes, aren't you? I was amazed how kind all the doctors have been about focusing on you.
Yes.
And what you need and what's important for your life, rather than doctors like me in the past that might have said, you'll have this operation and this treatment and this chemo done. Yeah. it's been completely about you and what you want. And that's been so lovely for me to learn, to
yes.
see.
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. And even, you know, see the GP practice, and they've been brilliant as well.
It's like a load of people have just swept you up when they're looking after you.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Telling me to back off, which is probably
exactly.
a good thing. Now, before your operation, you called yourself the one-armed bandit, the soon-to-be one-armed bandit on Twitter. And now you've added that you're a swashbuckling chemo granny. And you're gaining followers by the hour. It's amazing. You've created this lovely little corner on social media where people really care for each other. And it's incredible.
I also get a lot of men, single men, who are all into love or whatever. So they have to get blocked.
You don't like the attention from the toy boys. Yeah, so welcome to my
numbers
world.
Numbers are maybe not that high because you keep blocking all these men.
I've got to ask, why did you decide to tell Twitter you were going to have your arm amputated when you're normally quite a private person?
Yes. Well, it turned out this was the time where the media were obsessed with Boris and resigning, and everybody was all the talk.
So for people who aren't in the UK listeners, Boris was our Prime Minister. This is in the summer of 2022.
That's right. And everybody was going on and on, and you just couldn't even look at the news. And so I thought, right. And I just wrote on Twitter, "Dear Boris, I'm having my arm amputated to protect the rest of my body. Why don't you resign to protect the country?"
And what happened the next day?
He resigned. Yeah, you see the power of having a rare cancer. Oh, yeah.
And then you became the one-armed bandit.
I did indeed, yes.
And I found a T-shirt online that had one-armed bandit on it. Yeah. And I brought it in the day after your op, worried I'd gone too far down the black humour line, but you loved it.
I loved it, absolutely, I did.
And did your doctors know that you were on Twitter?
Yes. On the day of the op, when I saw the surgeon, I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name or not.
Yeah, Mr. Bayliss.
Mr. Bayliss. Yeah. And he was just talking through, and he said that his wife had been following me on Twitter, and I said, oh, dear. I thought, I'm in trouble now. But he did actually say it was nice to hear what someone was thinking, you know, about what was wrong with them and that. So that was okay.
And then what happened on the day after your surgery?
Yes, when I was moved up to the ward, the chief executive of the hospital came, and I thought, oh, no.
You're really in trouble now.
I'm really in trouble now. But, of course, he was just the same. He said he had enjoyed reading them and perhaps he could do something in the future.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really...
And he even topped up your water, didn't he?
Of course he did.
Chief executive of Stanmore.
I couldn't. That was just, you know...
Now, one thing I have to talk about that you are becoming famous for on Twitter is how to be more Isabel. What's all that about?
I have no idea. I think it was to do with a chip butty.
That's right.
Yes, of course, it was after the operation, I was put in recovery ward. And as I came, you know, I was quite all right. I was awake and everything and started to feel quite hungry and thought, oh, I could just eat a chip butty. And then the doctor who was there, I said, oh, no, this patient's had general anaesthetic. She can't have anything to eat. Oh, no.
That's not fair.
No.
And then we got back from seeing the consultant
the first time.
It was a long drive. It's a good 5-6 hour drive. Both too knackered to cook. Yeah. And you'd had.
We had a chip butty and a Magnum ice cream.
Perfect supper, carbs, carbs and carbs. And didn't you put that on Twitter?
I did.
And one of your followers said...
Yes, be more Isabel.
This is the perfect dinner. We should all be more Isabel.
Exactly.
But that's led to some confusion with your American followers.
Oh, yes. Because they didn't know what a chip butty was.
How could they not know what a chip butty is?
It's funny because I suddenly... I was honestly had a conversation on Twitter before I went to sleep about the... And I suddenly thought, oh... Hang on, they call chips crisps. Crisps are chips to them.
Yes.
And their chips are fries.
That's right.
So I had to wake up back on Twitter and say, we say chips, you say fries.
And then you had to explain what brown sauce is.
Oh, my God. And then, was that when we did the Marmite?
Yes,
or was someone
trying
else?
To explain Marmite.
So I had to take a picture of Marmite and send it to her.
Now, speaking of Marmite, you have a rather unique sandwich filling.
Absolutely.
Which I would never have because I don't like cheese. But can you just share with the listeners what Isabel's favourite sandwich is?
Oh, yeah, yeah. A slice of toast with some cheese, butter first, of course, and then the slices of cheese, and on top of that, banana, slices of banana, and then some Marmite, which I just kind of put in the microwave just for 2 or 3 seconds, and then you can just pour it over, and that's the banana. And
that's the sandwich of choice.
It is my sandwich.
Let me know if you like it. Now, you're now an ambassador for Sarcoma UK, and you're helping Bone Cancer Research Trust with their Baking Week in October.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How does it feel to be able to help raise awareness?
Well, I think it's very important. Here I am. I've got this rare cancer. I didn't know anything about bone cancers. And so I think if we can make the whole thing more public, and newspapers, media and that, to make people more aware that actually there are these bone cancers around. And young children especially, and teenagers, I think just generally young people. And, you know, it's not a very nice thing to have.
No, it's not.
Because
and if we can use that to drive more funding and research.
The research is very important.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm with
definitely.
You on that one. Now, I'm going to change track a bit now.
Oh, okay.
I want to talk about guilt. Because I had so much when I was diagnosed. Mm. Guilt that I was alive when my friends were dying of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Guilt about how my cancer was affecting my marriage. Mm-hmm. I wanted Dermot to go and marry a woman with two breasts and a libido because I only wanted a cup of tea. I thought, you didn't sign up to this.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you say in sickness and health, but you never think it means it. Can you relate to guilt and cancer?
A bit. I don't think I've ever really felt guilty. And maybe the guilt for me is because I've approached it in this weird way, whether and other people wouldn't. Other people would be, it may not, you know, they'd be totally different. And whether that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's probably not been as bad as you.
No.
No, definitely not.
Does it feel hard relying on your husband? Or him having to look after you?
Well, I know he's enjoying it. He's enjoying it probably too much because he does things which I could do. And he's just having to learn maybe not to do the odd thing that I can do. But yeah, but no, he's been amazing. And just, tying shoelaces or get my breakfast ready or whatever. And driving, of course, I can't drive.
Yeah. So that brings you on to the next question about grief. So I struggled a lot with the things that were taken from me, my fertility. Mm. You gave me all the clothes you'd knitted when you were pregnant for me to have if I ever got pregnant.
Oh,
and I
gosh.
Think, I'm never going to wear them. No. I can't have kids. The guilt of losing my career. I mean, we're both blooming careless. I've lost a breast. You've lost an arm. Mm. Do you grieve for anything since you've been diagnosed? Do you miss? What do you really, really miss?
Well, I think it's just your, total independence, isn't it? The fact that, it's just not being able to do all the things I did before. Driving, which is really important, was really important to me.
I guess we could try and get the car adapted after chemo, but we don't know how you're going to feel. But that must be really annoying, having to rely on Dad to take you to the shops.
That's right.
Because you're a great backseat driver.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm the best. Your dad doesn't drive to my standards. But I don't actually think about it.
Yeah.
But, you think, well, if you're going to fly somewhere, is it going to be a nuisance? And you just, you don't really. But I haven't really thought about it.
I guess it's all quite soon, isn't it? It's just been quite a whirlwind of just going through the motions.
Yeah. If you think it was the 13th of July, and you know, we're just into September now.
Barely 2 months, I know. Yeah, I think the thing that's amazed me is how much you can do with your wrong hand. Because you write with the right hand, not the wrong hand, for anyone out there listening. You're putting lipstick on. And I've had followers on Instagram sending me videos of them putting on lipstick with the wrong hand. And the hardest bit is getting the top off.
That's right.
Having to put it in my teeth. Yes. And you're putting on a necklace and your earrings with your left hand. It's amazing, these little things that you're doing. And
because they take a long time, whereas before you could just do them so quickly. But yeah, they just take a long time.
Having that patience to carry on.
Get it, get what's going in my ear. Go on. You've then got to put the back on.
Yes.
And by the time you've picked the back up, the earrings falling out.
I can't, but you always look so well turned out, so put together. You've never, I mean, I spend half my life in muddy dog walking clothes, but you're always so stylish. And I love that about you with a matching lippy. It's like, this is my goals. I'm going to be more Isabel.
Well, you are.
I'm getting there.
You're very stylish.
But I wanted to ask, this is coming a bit left field, what's it like having a daughter who talks about elephants? You can't have many friends whose daughters want to talk so openly about sex and death to a quarter of a million people. Do you think I share too much?
Sometimes I think so. I do. But then I think, well, this is what she does. And it's obviously lots of people appreciate everything that you're writing or talking about. And so it's probably okay. But sometimes,
I think for me, it's hard once I start opening, like, a bit like Pandora's box. You want to let a little bit of it out. And then you think, oh, people can read anything about me. It's like, well, no, it's still your private life.
Yes,
and it's really hard.
Your personal, private,
to remember where the lines are.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Now, this will sound like I'm fishing for compliments,
okay.
Are you proud of me? And I know that sounds awful. I should say that again, shouldn't I? But it's...
You are, absolutely. You know, absolutely proud of you for what you've achieved since, you know, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. All you've gone through and all this, you're now doing, well, you've got a new job.
I do. Or jobs. I wish it paid.
You know, all the talks you give and all the Zoom, you know, everything. Yeah. It's really, it's a lot. It takes up a lot of your time. Mm. And you do, you probably sometimes do too much.
I'll be honest, there are times I want my cancer to come back so I can clear the diary and start again. I still find it very, very hard to say no to people.
Yeah, that's it. That's the thing, isn't it?
I never put myself first, and I think that's something I'll always learn.
Yeah.
This is a question. Are you angry about getting cancer?
No.
No.
No, not that I'm aware. No, I'm not. I think it's probably because of my age. Mm-hmm. You just have to accept that you're going to get some, you may get something, and this is what I've got. And so I'm not angry about it at all.
I think a lot of people expect you to be angry when you have cancer, but it's like, it just happens.
Yes.
You have no choice. You just have to do what they tell you.
Were you angry? You must have been angry too.
I didn't. I was angry at the things cancer cost me. So I was angry about losing my fertility.
Yes,
I was angry about losing my job, but it was more denial.
Yes.
Part of me still thinks I haven't had cancer twice.
Yeah, yeah,
it's not real. It can't be happening.
Yeah. I can
it's
go
really
with that.
Weird.
I feel that because I feel so well.
Yeah.
Ish.
But that's true. I mean, you feel well, you're about to start chemo for a cancer that's spread. It's like, how can that be happening when no one would look in the streets and know that you'd... Mm-hmm.
That's right. So, hello.
She's talking to my dog, Hunter, who's curled up on her lap on the sofa.
Yeah.
And when you think of everything that's happened to the two of us, and not just the cancer, but, you know, you got me through bullying at school and my depression, there's been so much that's happened to us as a family. And we can laugh and joke about the little things. But what do you think keeps you going when the shit keeps coming?
I have no idea. It's just something inside and that you just have to keep going, don't you?
Now, one of the things I had a lot of in the beginning that you're now getting because of what you're talking about online is that people tell you you're incredible, you're amazing, you're so brave, your mums are courageous. How do you feel when you hear that?
I think it's daft because I'm not incredible. I'm just me. That's how I see myself. I don't see myself as being incredible and any kind of an inspiration, but, you know, it's how people see you.
It's hard to see the impact you have on other people. You're just putting stuff out there and living your life.
And maybe it's just because I'm kind of going through this positively and humorously. Yeah. That may be something.
And I love that about you, planning what to put on Twitter and let's take a photograph of this and how can we just bring some light into the world?
That's right, yes. Try to. And knowing that there are a lot of people out there who definitely don't feel like that. Yeah. And so I'm probably.
And that's okay.
That's okay.
Well, I think a lot of people do get angry and sad and cross and depressed. And it can be hard when others, we're laughing and joking through it as our way of coping. Yeah. And I think it's however you cope, it's fine. Mm. But I found planning what to say on Twitter helped me going, almost like a distraction.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It is.
And when you're having those, well, I still have those very low moments. Mm. There's always someone online, someone I can talk to, who's not my dad or not it's someone anonymous. Good. And just having that little bit of social interaction just to
that's good, isn't
lift
it?
Me up. I find that really helpful.
Oh, gosh, I would think so too. And of course, I'm very much aware that a lot of cancer patients, it's kind of a lifelong thing. It's not like you have the surgery and you maybe have the chemo and we're all fine. For some, maybe. But for others, like breast cancer patients who have to keep taking, tamoxifen drugs, which make them feel awful, hot flushes. And you think, goodness, this is something you've got to go through the rest of your life.
The side effects.
The side effects of and these I think drugs. Why couldn't somebody come up with a drug that doesn't give you side effects?
I know. And I think that makes it harder because everyone thinks you're cured. They look at me, you look great, you've got the lippy on. They don't see the chronic pain or the depression, the anxiety, all the side effects. And you don't want to tell them, how are you? Do you really want to know?
I know.
Or shall I just say, I'm fine?
That's it. That's what I do. Oh, fine.
You're fine. Yes.
But, because you have the pain under your arm.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, like you've got your phantom pain.
Yeah, oh, gosh, yes.
Which is just, I can't imagine. Where's your arm at the minute, Mum?
It's just sitting like this. It's
sitting bent across your lap.
It thinks it's in a sling. And it's just been a bit kind of, tingly or kind of thing.
But you can't complain about that all the time to the people you live with because they get pissed off and frustrated. The silent cross you bear sounds a bit religious, but it is that.
Yes, it's there. And yes, I have medication, which probably helps a bit, but it's just, it's fine. Considering the arm's gone, so it's reduced the recurrence of the cancer a bit. That's fine.
You don't realise it's not just an operation, it's everything that comes after
Indeed,
it.
Indeed, that's it. That's exactly right, isn't it?
Now, we talk a lot. Well, I probably talk too much. Yes. I like talking.
Yes, that's right.
And I'm sure I told you things you weren't ready to hear. And I remember in the car, actually, when we'd heard the news, I was driving you home and said, I'm not going to talk. Mm. I'll wait for you to ask me questions. 5 minutes later, rambling off again. This and this and this and this. But I think it's important that you can talk as a family.
Oh, yes.
Even if it's to tell your daughter to shut up.
Yes. No, I think it is important to be open and honest with the family about everything that you can.
And I'm still learning to do that.
Yes.
But I think it can be really hard to tell the people close to you how you feel.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. And I think what I'm just thinking now, you went off to university and really never came back.
No.
So I suppose I didn't really know you quite as well.
No.
It's like if you'd stayed in the area and been out all the time.
That's right, isn't it? I left home at 18, went to university, and I was such a bookish nerd at home, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And I guess I lived my life away from home.
You did. So I think that kind of means the separation just probably we didn't know you as much as we could have done.
And it feels now you're living around the corner. We're actually starting to get to know each other again, which is lovely.
I know, she keeps coming into my house. And,
buying you a lot of knives, rocker bottom knives and left-handed knives.
Oh, got more knives in there. Crikey. Yeah, I know.
But I wanted to ask, is there anything you're afraid of? Are you afraid of what is going to happen in the future?
At the minute, not really. I think about it, but I just want to see how I'm going to get on with the chemo.
Yeah.
And I know they said this will not cure it, will treat it. So yeah, it's going to, and I've got something in my hip, which is all right at the minute, they said. But I know if it comes back, there may be a time when they're going to say, actually, we can't do any more.
Yeah.
That will be horrible, but I think I'll know it's coming.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'll just have to, deal with that.
I guess that's the kind of thought you put in a box.
Mm-hmm.
To not think about until the time is
until
there.
Until it happens.
But almost like acknowledging that elephant in the room.
Yes.
You're going to die before you should.
Yes, that's right.
And we can, you know, doing your wills and all the kind of boring death admin that you never do with parents. But
that's
it's hard. It seems quite real.
Mm-hmm.
I know when Dermot always thought he would die before me.
Okay.
I said, no, my breast cancer could come back.
Yes.
I might not be here in 3 years. Can we please do our wills? No. And it's like, no, we have to talk about this. Yeah. It's important.
Indeed, it is. It really is important, yes, to sort out, you know, what's going to happen afterwards, to make sure people are not left with, you know, problems like Dermot was when...
I know, probate and things.
When your dad...
And not trusting dad to spend all your money on something silly.
I know.
We need to make sure it goes to the right people.
Indeed, we
Where do I sign up?
I don't got any money, but if I did...
I know. Now, I've saved the hardest question to the end.
Okay.
You are Isabel.
I am.
You couldn't be more Isabel if you tried.
Right.
But if you were only allowed one, what would you pick... A chip butty or a Magnum ice cream?
Oh, chip butty.
White or brown bread?
Oh, brown. Healthier.
Healthy, really?
Yes.
Butter?
Oh, absolutely.
And ketchup or brown sauce?
Oh, ketchup.
There we go. Mm. Be more Isabel. And listeners, I want you to tell me which would you pick. And if it's a Magnum, we need to know the flavour. What's your favourite flavour of Magnum?
They do a double choc one,
ooh,
which is rather nice. And there is a kind of, I think, a raspberry one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm.
I'll make a note.
Other than that, I'll eat anything.
Now, before you go, I want to talk about joy.
Mm-hmm.
And not our friend Joy, but actual physical joy.
Yes. Yeah.
I started a jar of joy, as you know, when my cancer had grown during chemo. Mm. And every time something good happened, I'd put a card and put it in the jar. And we have one for the podcast. We're about to start it for season two.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners can send in little things that have made them happy.
Okay.
And now it's your turn.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Well, the reason, my happy thing is that last night it bucketed with rain. We've not had rain for months. The clouds have gone by, the black clouds have gone by, and they just sailed past. Even Bury St Edmunds had rain, and we didn't. But last night, it really threw it down. So there's, how joyful was that for me?
That is definitely going in the jar.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Mum. I'm going to give you a hug. You've been incredible.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
You're allowed to give me a hug. Yes. It's been fun. I hope it hasn't been silly and nonsensical because sometimes you just prattle on.
Is that all right?
Crikey. I'm a bit emotional after listening to it again. I don't know about you, but I've been laughing and crying. I've nearly run out of hankies. It's made me remember what an amazing woman she was. If you'd like to donate to Mum's special fund with Bone Cancer Research Trust, I'll put the link in the show notes. And there'll also be a list of organisations there that have helped me cope with her loss. I had no idea that grief was this all-consuming. I'd love to know what you thought of this very special episode. Was it the right thing for me to share Mum with you all? She meant so much to me, and I know she meant so much to people who followed her online. I'd like to ask you all to keep an eye out on social media, as I will be issuing a series of one armed bandit challenges wearing Mum's special t-shirt as I find out how hard it is to get ready with only my left hand. But for now, let's all go out there and be more Isabel. Anyone for a chip butty?